It is Friday, November 22nd. Let's talk PlayStation. So there's a lot of PlayStation news to go over, but first, a quick sneak peek at my next video game documentary, which I hope to have ready by this coming Tuesday the 26th. Take a look.
In March 2001, IBM, Toshiba, and SCE announced the joint development of a super parallel processor for the age of broadband networks. The project is codenamed Cell.
PlayStation 3 is powered by the world's most powerful processor at Cell with RSX.
I mean, he was a real visionary, but I think he was kind of a Japanese Steve Jobs in that he had a vision.
Like, the PlayStation 3 makes my life as a software developer much harder.
He changed the industry, he changed this, and I said he put half of the development community out of business.
PlayStation 3 is the most ambitious project we at Sony Computer Entertainment have ever undertaken in our very short history.
You have no idea how much I really wanted to do a deep dive on the PS3. Now, we've done PS3 versus 360, but this will focus purely on the system's launch, the cell processor, Kenkuduragi, all that good stuff that will hopefully be ready by the 26th. If not, I will let you all know on the community tab here on YouTube and over on Twitter at Mystic Ryan, as always. Now, let's start with our PlayStation Plus reminders. The November games are Nioh and Outlast 2. You still have plenty of time to download these games, but we will find out what those December titles are within the next week or so. Now, for our first news story, I just want to give you a quick update on one from last week. If you remember, we were talking about Microsoft slowing down on acquiring more studios. Xbox had Phil Spencer stepping in and not backtracking, but correcting the original statement. He's basically saying that, yes, we're going to be executing, making great games, quality content, but it's not necessarily like we're not buying more studios. We're always keeping our eyes peeled, more or less. They're not necessarily stopping acquiring more studios. Just if it makes sense, then they will. For our next one, if you remember my video on PS3 and PS4 vaporware games we've been waiting a really long time for but have not come out or just been canceled, 8 Days was one of those titles that we looked at. Very early PS3 game, was used as a tech demo, was supposed to be a full title, ended up getting canceled. Over on Polygon, Blake Hester posted a very good expose talking to some ex-Sony London staff about what went down. I'll link it down below, you really should read the whole thing, but some key points that I found really fascinating. There was good severance pay, so Sony took care of the staff that were laid off due to the project, but they tried to either relocate them to other European studios or they let them take home work for resume material. There was a proper burial for the game, so basically when they found out that the game was canceled, a lot of the staff went to a local bar and kind of gave it like a one-off funeral type thing by putting pictures in like a makeshift box and stuff of like the protagonists and, you know, kind of sad when you really think about it, because they were really passionate about the project. But the third one was, this was supposed to be a really cinematic game, almost like what Uncharted ended up being, to be honest, but they tried to attach John Travolta and Halle Berry to the project, which didn't come to fruition, not even because the game was canceled, but rather they just couldn't come to terms with either the pay or the timing, whatever ended up happening, but they were trying to get some pretty big names attached to it as well. So some good insight into a game that we will more than likely probably never ever see. Also, while we're talking about these early PS3 days, another great, fascinating fact that came out was during the IGN Unfiltered episode with Phil Harrison talking to IGN's Ryan McCaffrey. And I love that Ryan McCaffrey asked about the early PS3 days. I always love stuff like this, but Phil Harrison, if you remember, a lot of positions at Sony over the years before he left. He was the head of Worldwide Studios. That was before Shuhei Yoshida took over. He was the vice president of Sony Computer Entertainment Europe, so he did a lot with PlayStation basically before he left. Then he went to Atari. Right now he's leading Google Stadia, that's why he's doing a lot of press right now. Anyway, Phil Harrison talked about why the PS3 had a lot of manufacturing delays. One big thing was the 5-cent Blu-ray diode. He basically said there was this little Blu-ray diode going from the red laser to the blue laser. And that one little part, that one little 5-cent part made the manufacturing efforts so slow and why it was initially delayed so much. I would imagine that's one part of it. There's many other cogs that made it launch a year later than Microsoft, certainly. But I would imagine it was a big part of why there was only like 400,000 some odd units going to North America. I think Japan only got about 90,000 to 100. And then it had to get delayed up to March 2007 for Europe. But that's awesome. And it's true what Ryan mentions in IGN Unfiltered. The product can only go as fast as the lowest common denominator, which for that part, pretty much drags down the entire product. Moving on to our PS5 stuff, there's a lot to go over. That's why in the title of the video, I even just wrote lots of PS5 stuff. Honestly, titling Let's Talk PlayStation is so hard because there's so many things and you can only put so much in the title. But anyway, we'll start with this one. Over on Twitter, Paul Tassi tweeted out about how great Google Stadia is, talking about some of the perks of the service. Well, Jason Schreier from Kotaku retweeted that, adding his own comments, stating, "Not coincidentally, play right away, download just what you need, no load times will be some of Sony's top selling points for the PlayStation 5. Low-key saying, hey, Sony understands that, even Microsoft understands that, and that's going to be their way to sell these boxes to you on the precedent of streaming becoming more widely adopted." Which, I mean, if you do look at some of the early impressions for Stadia, for example, and even xCloud, a lot of people are actually pretty optimistic about it. There's still a lot of naysayers, and it is going to be this kind of medium where a lot of people are going to get dragged into it kicking and screaming. I think it will take much longer than a lot of these big companies think it will, but there's still this idea that we have to make a case for selling traditional boxes, still playing on discs, or even downloading things locally to the hard drive. And this is not the first time we've heard of this. We've heard of this on a number of occasions, plenty of different rumors suggesting this is the big marketing ploy that Sony and more than likely Microsoft will go for with SSDs. And that's why they are so important moving forward. And this is what they can really do, which is a good segue to our next news story. One of the lead programmers at Remedy, Sean Donnelly, was speaking to PlayStation Official Magazine UK, discussing the SSDs on PS5 and talking about what they can accomplish and why they're so important. He was quoted as saying, "When it comes to the PS5, faster hardware is always appreciated and will make life easier in the short term, but it's the new SSD that really stands out. Essentially, streaming will become something that we don't really have to worry about so much, and it will free up some extra CPU bandwidth in the process." So what he's referencing here is what developers have to do to skirt around load screens or make them not as annoying. I mean, there's a lot of different development techniques, one of them being field of view, for example, where what you're looking at is what's loaded in and then everything behind you is either low res or completely gone and the camera angle and is basically following you, and that's, you know, that's one way to side skirt performance issues and trying to extract more power out of the hardware by pretty much turning off everything that you're not near. Or some games, just the way that they're made, they say, look, you have to sit here and watch this 60-second little cutscene as we load in the next area because the player movement is just too fast for whatever the dynamic of the game is. Maybe there's the player character moves really fast. Maybe it's a racing game where it has to load tracks individually, right? Of course, it's a very broad spectrum, but he's describing that because of the SSD, the fast read-write speeds, there's a lot of things where now you can just access more CPU power because it's so much quicker to read and write the data. Another good example that's still recent but older would be PlayStation 3 and 360. 360 shipped without a hard drive as the minimum. It offered hard drives, but the minimum could be that you actually could buy an Xbox 360 without a hard drive and just use memory cards. That was early in 2005, right? Most 360 users ended up having a hard drive, but Microsoft mandated that every single game made for 360 support memory cards, which was a bit of an extra workload for certain developers and certain games, depending on the scope of whatever they were trying to accomplish, because that memory card requirement was a bottleneck. Being able to lean on a hard drive like PlayStation 3, which shipped standard with a hard drive, was something that developers could lean on. So there was always pros and cons when developing in the previous generation, but that's a good example. That's why it's actually such a big deal now that both machines have SSD standard. You're going to see a lot less inconsistencies like the previous generation. Now, with the SSD thing, we have another update from last week when we were talking about those cartridges that Sony patented, and we were discussing what that's for, and if it is for PS5, the one that makes the most sense is that it's SSD expandable storage, since it's not an off-the-shelf PC part like we've been used to with 2.5-inch laptop hard drives for PS3 and PS4. Well, Let's Go Digital, again, very good job on their part, doing a lot of digging. They found another patent from SIE Japan that is apparently much older than the one that they recently found. And this one corroborates the theory much better than it is for a games console, PlayStation 5, you would assume, and it could be SSD expandable storage. So the excerpt that they found and shared, and I would presume this was translated from Japanese, but this says, "This is a recording medium which can record various data such as character, an image, an animation, a sound, and a program by loading the opening provided by the game console with the tip end part by which a variety of pins of this cartridge were provided. The various data recorded on this cartridge can be read." So this actually explicitly states that it's a games console. So that bodes well. If this turns out to be for PlayStation 5, then It's got to be that, right? That's the nature and reality of what we have. This is more proprietary. You can't just put a regular SSD in your PlayStation 5. Sony has said that much, that it's a highly specialized part that they've worked with AMD on. And Microsoft's in the same scenario. So we're not going to be able to just buy whatever hard drive we want. I mean, this is going to be something that Sony's going to offer. But again, they're just patents. So we'll have to wait and see. But again, it sounds very plausible if this is what it would be for. So just yesterday, Sony announced a new division for AI and R&D. They will be exploring deep artificial intelligence that is trying to replicate human emotion and imagination and creativity. And this is a new, basically umbrella division where it's going to trickle down the technology to many other avenues within Sony. They specifically reference in their press release their image sensors, but also game consoles. So their games division, basically. How could AI be used in PlayStation? I'm not entirely sure. We do know that we had a patent not that long ago regarding an AI assistant for a smartphone that could be used in conjunction with a PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 5. And the example that was used in that case was, say you're playing Horizon Zero Dawn or Skyrim and you want to know where a close health pack is or a close item is or something to that effect, you could pull up this app on your phone, speak to it and say, where can I find so-and-so? And the app would actually put the information on the game, on the map. So it's obviously a part of the SDK when you're making the game, but the virtual assistant would play a big role in that, right? Where you're speaking to it. And that's all the rage today with technology when you really think about it. We have Amazon Alexa, Siri, Cortana. Actually, Cortana's closed now, isn't it? But there's AI assistants everywhere. Every major tech company is putting in an AI assistant. If you've got any sort of banking app on your phone, there's now a little virtual assistant there that it doesn't vocally speak to you, but it's this deep learning where you can just type informally to it and it kind of understands what you're saying and gets you to your information immediately. That's where a lot of tech companies are really starting to explore how to streamline the process, remove any sort of human intervention, make it a lot easier, more accessible to get access to what you need to. And this is Sony more than likely doing the same thing. They're also a big tech giant, and it would seem a little weird that they wouldn't dip their toes into this area where traditionally they've actually had a long history in this, specifically robotics, which they again mentioned in the press release. So I, if anything, I'm more surprised something like this didn't happen sooner. But perhaps this could be applied to this next patent, which is for user-generated content. And it says user-generated content, but really it just sounds like it's describing the share button on PS4, which it doesn't directly say PS4, PS5, anything like that, nothing. But it says, you know, this is for user-generated content and pulling metadata out of the footage. So it directly states you'll be taking photos, videos of content, but it could use metadata to either apply, find out where the footage came from, when it was taken. The very act of recording a video or taking a photo is user-generated content. But if we're talking about actual user-generated content where the content that you took a picture of was made by another person, maybe when it's referencing metadata, it's saying you can pull the characteristics of that piece of item out of there and figure out what it is. But to me, this almost sounds like a deeper control over your own content. When you start actively recording and taking a lot of pictures, you could get a better overview of the information, or you can search your information. So if you don't want to thumb through tons of video and tons of photo, again, maybe the AI thing could come in where it's like, hey, show me that footage where I fought this boss. And because you don't want to thumb through, let's say, 3 hours of footage if it lets you record that much or whatever, right? And then the AI assistant could come in, pull that data off. I'm just trying to make a use case for how this patent is described. That seems to make the most sense to me, but accounting for this, the AI assistant, the AI division, Sony is getting serious about this, and this may be something that we can see beyond just some simple patents. But now let's get to our big patent news story. It looks like Sony filed a patent for a new controller design, which may or may not be for PlayStation 5, but it very much so looks like a DualShock 4, but there's some slight differences. Now remember, in the recent Wired.com article where we got some slight details about what this controller will be like, the haptic feedback, the USB-C, larger battery, we know that it looks similarly to a DualShock 4, and so does this. Now, if you look at these very crude sketches, we can draw some details and some slight differences from the current controller we have right now, which is DualShock 4. You would assume Sony would call this DualShock 5, but the handles are a bit thicker. In fact, the entire base of the controller is a bit thicker, and I akin it to more of an Xbox 360 or even an X1 controller, where it doesn't necessarily have to be heavier, but the real estate of how much plastic is actually there between the handles and then the midsection of the controller where you see that touchpad stays right in between those two sticks, the PlayStation button, that entire area has gotten a little bit larger. In fact, the touchpad looks like it's gotten a bit larger as well, whereas the sticks seem to be a little bit smaller. You can see that we do have a little USB-C port in the bottom. That's where you would think it would go. It'd be weird if it was in any other direction, which looking at these sketches, it technically could show up anywhere. Remember, I mean, this thing is not filled in. It's a very simple sketch. So I know a lot of people are looking at this and thinking, well, where's that light bar? Is that gone? Now, it certainly could be gone because we are at a point where I don't think Sony really needs the camera to look at just a very crude little light on the controller to keep that, to track it. You know, we've got tech a little bit further now that lets us move away from simple light tracking. But I will say, I don't know if it's entirely gone. I see a one little line up at the very top of that controller, which may or may not be a small little indicator light. Because what's so weird is that I'm seeing a lot of people get upset that the light bar is gone because they thought it was cool. Not even because it was for like PlayStation Move games or anything like that. They just liked how it was cool, even though it used up battery. And in all honesty, most people didn't really need it or care for it. And then more people being upset about the touchpad and saying, why aren't you getting rid of the touchpad? Which, you cannot get rid of the touchpad because, well, not only do we have backwards compatibility with PlayStation 4 titles, but there's much greater implications than you think. You could say, oh, well, not that many PS4 games use the touchpad. Well, they didn't use it in the sense of what you are thinking, which is swipe gestures. No, not many developers used swipe gestures on the DualShock 4's touchpad. That was the thing for like the first year. I can only name a handful of titles, and I think they're all Sony first-party titles, but there's probably a few third-party games that had swipe gestures on it. But a vast majority of PS4 games treat the touchpads as the touchpad as an extra button because you can click the left side, the right side. I'm sure there's other small little double taps and things like that you can do that some developers have already programmed to do it. But a majority of PS4 games use the touchpad as buttons as well. And so there's no retroactive way to make sure all those games work while also removing an entire button off the controller, right? Software-wise, you could maybe map it to something else, but you can't even do that because an existing button would mess it up for that particular software that you're trying to play. So the buttons would have to stay in some way, shape, or form, right? And then you could just have to, you'd have to convey to consumers any, you know, games that have swipe gestures aren't going to work. But that gets money, right? To say like, oh, these, say 50 to 100 some odd games, well, you can't play these on your PS4 anymore. However, all these ones do work. You just have to have buttons now. And then when you play a PS4 game and you bring up a DualShock 4 in the menu of that game and you see that there's a touchpad on it and you look at your controller, oh, it doesn't have that. It doesn't work. It just gets way too muddy. Sounds like a PR nightmare. The touchpad has to stay there. Sony's committed to it. And I'm not really a fan of it, but hey, it's here to stay. And so with this, I mean, is this the DualShock 5? Probably. In all honesty, there's probably some differences. It will is very much so subject to change, but the fact that we've already been told that it looks very similar to a DualShock 4, I don't really think it's going to change all that much. And if holding it in the hand feels more like a 360 controller, I'm all for that. I love how the 360 controller feels. I know a lot of people do. That's some people's favorite controller, and for good reason. The only thing I don't like about it is asymmetric sticks. I like symmetric sticks, so if I can get the 360 controller build with symmetric sticks and everything else that Sony's been doing with the DualShock 4, I'm all for it. Now, for this next news story, I'm not really sure what to make of this, but there's something going on with Sony and Crash Bandicoot again. There was a banner ad on a bus in the UK that clearly shows Crash and PlayStation being affiliated on there. Then there was a new trailer that Sony put out on one of their channels, and it's a live-action trailer, which I always like these. They're pretty cool-looking, but there's a scene where Crash is racing on a go-kart through it, and there's like a little mask following them. And as far as I know, and as far as other people are seeing, this mask has never been a part of any Crash Bandicoot games whatsoever. It looks like a entirely original character, whatever this little mask is. And now there's a rumor going on that Sony Pictures, not PlayStation Productions, which is also puzzling, but Sony Pictures is working on a Crash Bandicoot movie. And apparently the source of that, where that source is coming from, had correctly guessed other things in the movies in the movie industry, which I can't get into the specifics of. I don't follow movies like that. But apparently that's the case. So what do we make of this? Well, I don't really know. Activision still owns Crash Bandicoot. That's why they did the trilogy and tested the waters to see how it did. And because it did so well and exceeded expectations, that's more than likely what greenlit the Spyro trilogy. So they're probably pursuing the Crash IP further, which I think is awesome. I don't think anybody's really going to have a problem with that, assuming it's done properly, because Crash has had kind of a slippery slope in its life. But if they realize what people really enjoyed, which was the core franchise and the core gameplay, and capitalizing on that and maybe doing other ventures with the character, like movies, for example, makes a lot of sense. Now, the PlayStation affiliation, don't read too much into that. Sony initially had a year-long exclusivity with the Crash Insane trilogy, so there's obviously a good working relationship there. If something happens where there's another Crash game, and we're seeing these very early teases on Sony's YouTube channel and the banner ad, that could be some very minor insight to having a year exclusivity with whatever this next game is, or even just having marketing rights. That's a big thing too, right? The game will still launch day and date on all platforms, but Sony will have marketing rights to the game, so every time you see a trailer for it, it's always a PlayStation logo behind it and not any other platform specifically named, even though it's available everywhere. But not really much else to say other than this is suspiciously suspicious. Let's move on to Let's Talk Plus, the weekly Let's Talk PlayStation giveaway, where one of you could win a $10 PSN code, and I'd like to congratulate Jose Saavedra. You have won a $10 code. You can let me know if I pronounced that correctly, but I'll be contacting you very soon via email or Twitter. Now, if you'd like to win a $10 code, follow that link down below. We do this every single week on Let's Talk PlayStation. Supporting this channel in a number of ways can gain you an entry, and I'll announce the winner next week because I am trying to pay for your games. Those are all the news stories I want to talk about the all from this past week. On Tuesday, we did discuss PS5 rumored games, confirmed games. It's a very good recap in terms of what you may or may not be able to play 1 year from now on your PlayStation 5, so check that out. Now, like I mentioned earlier, hopefully this coming Tuesday, the next documentary on PlayStation 3 will be ready, but if for some reason it isn't ready, I will let you know. But as always, 10 a.m. EST for that video, so stay posted for that. And then the following week, we got another unboxing, the next one from eBay, which is also very good, but also hilariously terrible at the same time. But that's it. That's all I got for you. That concludes this week's episode of Let's Talk PlayStation. I'm Ryan Podecki. Thank you all so much for talking with me, and I will see you all next Friday.